This is a Roundtable Rewind.
You know, you guys have brought up the Trevor Lawrence interception. And I saw Stuart Mandel bring this up on The Athletic. Not just is his interceptions up, Trevor Lawrence's completion rating and passer rating both down as well.
I think 5% in completions. I think he went from a 65% passer last year on average to through the first three games this year, he's only completing 60% of his passes. And he's completing more to the other team, which both those things are concerning.
It does feel like that's a little nitpicking on what we're doing with Clemson being the defending national champions. You Alabama fans and Auburn fans going into 2011 without Cam realize that when you've got the trophy from the previous year, people look for all your cracks in the armor, and you do it. Sometimes you find them quickly, sometimes you don't. It seems that's what we're doing with Trevor Lawrence, but there are some alarming trends if he doesn't turn it around.
I think 5% is significant enough to worry about, don't you?
Yeah.
And a completion percentage.
Yeah. I mean, he played good enough in their one meaningful game so far.
Oh, he did.
And it's going to be a
while. He was good.
It's going to be a while before they play another one.
That's true. Dabo taking shots at people's schedules yesterday shows you how easy his is.
All right. Time now for our Baumhauer Spotlight. On Wednesdays, we give you the big storylines for the upcoming weekend. So, Rockstar, hit it, man.
It's the Baumhauer's Victory Grill Spotlight.
This week's favorite storylines in college football.
Hey, it's finally football season at Baumhauer's Victory Grill, and they've got all your tailgating needs covered, from their full line of signature sauces to their convenient party-ready trays and more. There's something for the whole team at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. Get Baumhauer's in your game day lineup by visiting baumhauer.com/tailgate for more information. Baumhauer's Victory Grill, legendary fun, legendary food.
I wanted something a little hearty yesterday, so I swung by Baumhauer's for lunch and had that Havana Bowl.
Oh, those are good.
Grilled chicken with the right seasoning on top of the black beans and rice with some grilled onions in there. That was a great meal there from our friends at Baumhauer's. All right, 6:36, Brown, start us off here. What's one of your favorite storylines going into this weekend?
Guys, do you remember when Tennessee-Florida was the biggest game in the SEC each year?
I do, yeah.
Look it up, kids.
It was not my favorite time in SEC history, but I do remember.
Because Alabama was down. Yeah, Alabama wasn't down that entire time. I mean, Stallings had the better team in the West a lot of times.
Yeah.
Tennessee-Florida used to be the biggest game in the Southeastern Conference. It's not anymore.
One of the biggest ones in the country.
Well, yeah, it was a national championship elimination game, honestly. 13 of 14, Florida has won. Can you believe the streak is that big now? 13 out of the last 14.
Well, I think it shows you where, you know, I say this, but it's not like Florida's been gangbusters consistently.
No, this has been one of the more average runs in Florida football.
Yeah, that surprises me a little bit. I mean, I know Alabama's dominated Tennessee. I didn't know Florida had beaten Tennessee 13 of 14.
15 turnovers in the last five appearances in this game for Tennessee, so they've got to clean that up. And the last game at Gainesville, do you guys remember how that one ended? The Hail Mary full of grace, as Brad Nessler called it.
Felipe Franks.
And that's one of the big storylines here, not playing in this game. So Kyle Trask getting his first start. This is look, it's under the radar. Tennessee and Florida probably aren't going to compete for the East this year. But this is an interesting little game to me. Can Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt get back in the – they desperately needed a win. And how does Kyle Franks react to his first start? That's Tennessee and Florida this weekend.
Yeah, 11 o'clock on ESPN. It's the right out of game day game opposite of Michigan and Wisconsin and Southern Miss and Alabama and LSU and Vandy and California and Ole Miss in that early window. All right, LT, what's your big storyline for the upcoming weekend that interests you?
We're going to go Friday night primetime, L.A. Coliseum. Utah heads in to take on the Trojans of USC, coming off a disappointing loss in overtime to BYU. On paper, this one looks relatively easy. Utah's virtually a top 10 team. Tyler Huntley's been lights out. Andy Lugwood, what he's done for this offense. The offensive line is yet to give up a sack. But you look at this rivalry. Eight times they played since Utah came into the Pac-12, they're 2-6 against USC. The last time they beat USC on the road was in 1916 at nearby Fiesta Park. They've never beat the Trojans at the Coliseum. And I go back 2015 when I got in a Twitter feud with Utah fans. They came into this game 6-0, the number three team in the country, as a 3.5-point favorite. It was by far my favorite game in history. I don't know if you guys remember this.
My favorite game in history?
Like as the
point spread.
Oh, point spread. Okay.
Yeah. Point spread in history.
I do remember this.
I talked it up the Saturday before the Saturday.
Yep.
Talked it up all week. They came in laying 3.5. By the way, they're laying 3.5 in this game, and they got shellacked by USC 42-24. I think it's really interesting. They just can't win in the Coliseum for whatever reason, even when they're the much better team.
I always – your high bar, Lance, was that NC State upset over Florida State. That's the one I always think of because I've never seen you more confident in a game.
Well, I was more confident in this USC game. I remember, NC State to cover, that was they were getting 14 there. Yep. They won the game outright.
I was about to say that – I do remember now that Utah-USC game. Lance told us for weeks they're not going to win this game.
Bowl eligibility. It's early to be thinking about it, but for some teams, this must-wins, they're coming. Tennessee – maybe one of the bigger ones, you know, with their loss to Georgia State and BYU, it put them in a serious situation. They need a win at Florida to sort of make up for a loss. But also a couple other teams that find themselves in situations I'm not sure they thought they'd be in. South Carolina on the road at Missouri this weekend. That is a situation where South Carolina is in desperate need of a victory. They can't drop Missouri and still hope to get to 6.
Nope.
Stanford, all of a sudden, as they have a tough home game with Oregon, 6:30 on ESPN, 6 o'clock on ESPN. You can't lose this game if you're Stanford now that you've dropped USC and UCF. Stanford needs this win to get to 6. I mean, they lose this one, South Carolina, Stanford, you start trying to find enough W's to get to the bowls.
They're a rarity in the Pac-12. They have got 4 ranked teams remaining on their schedule Oregon game.
To me, I don't know how they get this win just based on the Stanford team that I've seen the last couple of weeks, even with Costello back in that lineup. This could be one of the bigger surprises in college football if Stanford ends up going 5-7.
Yeah, I mean, that is so unlike David Shaw.
Yeah, if you're wondering to start off the season – and according to the FPI, Stanford was a 73% chance of being bowl eligible.
Mm.
That chance is down to 32% now. Tennessee went into the season 70% chance they'd make a bowl game, according to the FPI. That number, 16% now for the Tennessee Volunteers. Almost must win for them this weekend. So my big storyline going into the weekend, along with all your great ones, is watching a certain number of teams. Those 3 need wins in tough places or either at home against a tough team to try to get bowl eligible or at least keep that hope alive. 6:42, that's our spotlight today. Big storylines into the weekend brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer's.
Alabama-born bread, Baumhauer's Victory Grill, been serving up legendary fun, legendary food for nearly 40 years with their full menu of scratch-made American classics and all your game day favorites, plus wall-to-wall TVs and state-of-the-art sound systems at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. It's game day every day. For a full list of locations and information, visit Baumhauer's.com. Baumhauer's Victory Grill, legendary fun, legendary food.
If South Carolina beats Missouri, they can do – you're right, Jim, they can do it. If they lose this game, I just don't see a path to bowl eligibility.
They can't do it.
They can't. I mean, because they've got Kentucky, which is at best a toss-up, at Georgia, Florida, at Tennessee, which – they can win. Vandy, they can win. Appalachian State, they can win. That's the stretch where they can find 3 wins. But then they finish at A&M and against Clemson. This is it for them, I think. They've got to win this game to get bowl eligible.
And Missouri's been very quiet so far this year. This is a chance for them to wake up and get going to what the season everyone thought Missouri was going to have.
Well, this is a game Missouri can't lose when you go back to Wyoming week 1.
You're right.
Mike Leach had this interesting comment at his news conference yesterday. Basically, he's asked which Pac-12 mascot would survive, would win a fight of all the Pac-12 mascots. And keep in mind, Utah's never won at the Coliseum. Maybe they needed a gun. Here's Mike Leach, as only Mike Leach can break down a fight of a bunch of mascots.
Well, first of all, what kind of mythical powers does a sun devil have? We've got to consider that. I'm going to say the Wildcat's out. The Trojan, does he have a horse or is he on foot? Does he have a bow and arrow or just his sword? The Bruin, definitely formidable. Another bear up there at Cal. The tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down, unless we're going to go with a bird and somebody might get pecked or something. I don't know. And then the duck might lose interest and just fly away and get out of there, which may be good advice under the circumstances. The Husky, no chance. The Beaver, know, we'll see how long that beaver can hold his breath.
Long time.
The Ute, again, we're back to, is he on horseback? Does he have a bow and arrow? Did he trade for a rifle? I mean, you know, because if that Ute's got a rifle, there's some definite problems. You know, you'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there. Just as far as a beast alone, a buffalo's going to be pretty hard to tangle with. I mean, a buffalo's utterly outstanding. Well, but Butch is going to have to be clear-minded and crafty. I mean, Butch will find a way. There's no question. The Cougar will find a way. Clear-minded and crafty, a combination of stay out of harm's way and attack when you get your chances or your openings.
Yeah, what an original.
Yeah, that's fantastic there as he worked his way through that.
Good advice for a kid going to college, right? Clear-minded and crafty.
That's right, clear-minded and crafty. The buffalo is utterly outstanding.
Utterly outstanding.
But
he's right, though. The human with a gun
is
the game changer on the planet.
I like his historical references. He knew that the Trojan, when they were big, the guns didn't exist, right? So it was bow and arrow and horseback. But the Ute could have traded for a gun. And that is the game changer. If the Ute's got the gun, I'm going with him, right?
Well, back to the Sun Devil, though. What is a Sun
Mythical
Devil?
Mythical powers. We don't know. You got to get, as he said, a Harry Potter activist. I didn't know we had the Harry Potter activist.
Sure we do.
Fight him at night.
Yeah.
Fight him at night.
True rock star, the Cloak of Darkness.
When the sun goes down.
God, he's an original. Could he work in the SEC?
Yeah.
I wish somebody would ask Saban and Malzahn that question. Well, I mean, we're way too serious down here to do that.
I will tell you, the Ole Miss job may be open at some point. Would Mike Leach be a fit there? Would he even take it? That's sort of the level of job he's been given his whole life, unfortunately. We'll see if he moves on from Washington State or if he finishes up there. Interesting. We're getting this question on Twitter. Do we think Jake Fromm is an NFL quarterback?
Oh, yeah.
And Mike says, do you think he's a day one starter? I think he's definitely an NFL quarterback. To be a week one starter in the NFL, you got to go to a certain team. The great Aaron Rodgers waited years before he was a starting quarterback. But you have guys like Josh Allen, now Daniel Jones, Kyler Murray, they're day one starters,
I mean,
basically.
Daniel Jones, though, he was the eighth pick, right? And he wasn't even a day one starter on a bad team.
He wasn't day one, but, I mean, he's pretty, pretty quick.
It's game week three, but I'm just saying it takes some time.
To me, Jake Fromm will be a first-round pick, late first. Yeah, and I think he'll ultimately be a franchise quarterback. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. And late first usually gets you to a good team. That's what happened to Aaron Rodgers. So you may get in a situation when you're able to wait a year or two.
And you wonder if, with what Kirby Smart is building, if he starts to have NFL-like quarterbacks, because the strange thing about this Nick Saban run, and he's got one right now in Tua. I don't think there's any doubting that Tua will be a starting quarterback in the NFL next year.
Probably in Miami.
But when you look at the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL now, I went through and did this. This is pretty amazing. There are four group of five starting quarterbacks right now in the NFL.
Right now, these are before the injuries. Group of five starting quarterbacks.
Four FCS starting quarterbacks.
So already, before we get to the Power Five, already eight quarterbacks are chewed up.
Yeah. Duke and North Carolina both have starting quarterbacks now.
So before we get to the powers, there's 10.
So there's only 22 quarterbacks left.
Auburn is a snap away from having two starting quarterbacks in this league, and Cam Newton and now Jared Stidham.
Yeah, but you can't touch Tom Brady, so it's not going to happen.
Washington State has two starting quarterbacks in this league right now. NC State has two starting quarterbacks in this league
right now.
Are
we counting Falk as a starting quarterback now? Yeah,
well,
he is.
Louisville has two starting quarterbacks in this league right now.
Because of injury.
Alabama has one active quarterback in the NFL. It's pretty incredible when you really think about it. You look at the other situations.
That's A.J. McCarron.
And there's a chance he gets a snap. I mean, Deshaun Watson has been far from
injury-free.
Well, this morning,
you know, I was groggy and I was driving in and I was hearing about Cam's foot, and then I heard Deshaun Jackson is going to be out a couple of weeks, and I was like, oh, my God, Deshaun Watson's already hurt? So I just immediately I gravitated towards that, but Deshaun Watson is a guy that has had some injuries.
I mean, if A.J. wants to get on the way, you don't want it to be this way, obviously, but if he wants to get on the field.
But if you watch their opener, he was in the tent a couple times.
Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, Deshaun Watson when he went in. In the air for that, try to score the touchdown.
We've always talked about Mike Leach being a system guy and these system quarterbacks, but Gardner Minshew's got an opportunity now. Luke Falk's going to have an opportunity I mean, he's our Washington State quarterbacks. And if you're Mike Leach, and I know it might be hard to sell to Pullman, Washington, and especially if you want your family to be able to week in, week out, come see you play, but I can tell you you're going to be one of the top two or three passing leaders in college football, if not the passing leader in all of college football. And now I've got two guys that are starting in the NFL.
You know what? The weirdest thing is the NC State success at getting quarterbacks that in the NFL.
Because NC State quarterbacks and Iowa tight ends.
Yeah, but I mean,
I think they've got six active quarterbacks right now in the NFL.
Okay, and you're counting Russell Wilson, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Even though he technically is a Wisconsin grad, or he finished at Wisconsin, but he played all his ball at NC State. That's just the weirdest thing. And I mean, I don't know what it is. I know Norm Chow, who was very well respected back in the day, was the offensive coordinator there for a little bit under Chuck Amato. So maybe you give him some of the credit. I mean, Phillip Rivers, look, Alabama and Auburn didn't think of him what NC State did, or else he would have probably played at Alabama and Auburn. He wouldn't have gone to Raleigh.
Back when Alabama and Auburn could have used him,
they could have used a quarterback like that. It would have changed their programs. So I don't know. It's the weirdest thing that just out of the blue, NC State has kind of become a mini quarterback factory. Not even really mini. I mean, what'd you say, six? There are 32 teams in the NFL and six quarterbacks in the NFL, not starters, all of them, but six are NC State guys.
But it's always been that way with quarterbacks in the NFL. You go back to Romo at Eastern Illinois, Flacco's Delaware.
Yeah, I mean, Flacco and Garoppolo's Eastern Illinois.
Yeah. So it's just a...
Wentz at North Dakota.
Just a weird way they find talent.
But if you would have
NFL.
Told me 3 years ago in that incredible college football rivalry that is Duke and North Carolina, that these two starting quarterbacks and Daniel Jones and Mitch Trubisky are going to be starting in the NFL, I would have said there's no chance.
Yesterday at practice, Ale Cajo getting a little bit more work with Christian Harris. Cajo actually came in a little bit for Christian in the win up at South Carolina. And I do find it interesting as Notre Dame goes and plays Georgia this week. You know, Georgia's defense doesn't get as much pub, obviously, as Auburn and Alabama, LSU in this league, Texas A&M in this league. But Georgia's defense really good. If I asked you Chase Claypool and Chris Finke, the two wide receivers that Book throws to the most, how do they match up against Georgia's secondary? Do you like Claypool and Finke as receivers?
Well, these weren't, en route to going 12-0. These were not the featured guys necessarily last year. I don't know. We really just, haven't seen them on this stage. And I think for Book to have a lot of success, he's going to have to use his legs a little bit, and they're going to have to get the running game going. And again, going back to last year and a point that I've made, when the offense really took off at the end of September, for Notre Dame, it was when Dexter Williams was in that lineup, and he's gone now.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.
They're a weird mix. I mean, Georgia fans are. I find Georgia fans to be supremely confident,
right,
yet fatalist.
Yeah. Very, very entitled fan base.
Yeah.
For a fan base that hasn't won a championship since 1980. But in the back of their mind, you're right. I mean, if you get one drunk and you start talking to them, I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, we're going to fall apart.
But I do believe.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, this is the year that they think, I think we can get Saban. I think we can get this Alabama team.
So I don't know if Matt is, I mean, I know what Matt's doing. He's trying to convince himself otherwise. But today, I mean, he's calling it rat poison because we all think Georgia's going to blow him out. And I told him, I said, just look at Notre Dame versus these powerful Southern teams, Clemson included. I'm not just saying Southeastern Conference, I mean Southern. What happens every time they go up against them? Quality Southern teams.
I've got a four downs question coming up that involves this game.
Yeah.
And I already know your answer. Most of the time when I ask you guys a four downs, I don't know your answer, but I know that answer.
We'll save it. We'll do it right here in this segment. Let me get Tri-Green out of the way here. Tri-Green, not out of the way. We love Tri-Green here, but our headlines, it's 7:02 now. It's raining savings at Tri-Green Equipment. They have great deals happening on the full lineup of John Deere equipment. Visit trygreenequipment.com to learn more. It's time to try green. Seth Williams back at practice for Auburn. Coach Malzahn says they'll see how he progresses throughout the week, but it does look like He's on pace to play this weekend for Auburn as they travel to play Texas A&M in that battle of top 25 teams. The one thing that, and Gus Malzahn knows Kellen Mond very well, the one thing he's looking for his defense to do, not necessarily sack Kellen Mond, but they've got to pressure him. Here's the coach yesterday.
The pass rush, disrupting. I'd say the best thing is disrupting the quarterback's timing and making him uncomfortable. I mean, I think that's the biggest deal, you know, with him. Because when he's comfortable, he's very accurate.
South Alabama at UAB this weekend, 2:30 on Jocks. Right now, UAB, one of the better defenses in America on third down. They're only allowing 7 of 31 on third down through their two games. So that's a 2:30 game at Legion Field. You're hearing it here on Jocks. Cam Newton questionable for the weekend. He's got a foot injury. Braves magic number still 3 after the loss last night and the Nationals win. To finish my thought on the Irish there, the stat from Chris Felica, they are 1-17, Notre Dame is, versus top 5 teams since 2000. One of the worst records in college football of a minimum of 10 games. Wake Forest is 0-16, Vandy's 0-15, Indiana's 0-13, Boston College, Notre Dame are each 1-17 versus the top 5 since 2000.
So, I mean, if you're a Notre Dame fan,
you haven't beaten anybody really good.
But look at the company you're in with that stat. Read those teams again that are not Notre Dame.
Wake Forest is 0-16, Vandy's 0-15, Indiana's 0-13, Boston College is 1-17, Notre Dame is 1-17.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
That is embarrassing for Notre Dame to be in company, other than maybe like academic accomplishment, to be in the company with that set of teams for anything.
Now again, that's a small window of top 5. But those are your biggest
games.
Yeah, those are your biggest games. That's averaging 1 a year.
Yeah.
If you're Notre Dame. All right, 705 Cruz is with us on line 1. Hey Cruz, how are you?
Hey, good morning guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, buddy.
Here's my thing. I want to talk about this whole turnover thing. First of all, it's kind of annoying when Alabama has a turnover, they get a turnover and they're like, "Oh, here we go again. They're following the turn." People should know that Alabama kind of started that with the belt. But, okay, here's my question.
I really don't know what we're talking about, right?
Well, he's talking about the rewards for a turnover, like the turnover chain or the turnover pencil that one school has. Yeah,
Alabama has had their belt for forever.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
And other people have kind of followed that.
Not forever. But 1 year before the turnover chain, they had the turnover belt. Yeah.
Okay. So here's my question. When a team gets a turnover, because that's the other team's ball, so then they bring it to the sideline, do they have to pay the team for the ball, or do they have to give the ball back?
Well, I think they give it back.
Yeah, you don't keep it in college like you do in the NFL. Like an interception in the NFL, you know, you'll see them hand it to a trainer, and they'll put a piece of tape on it, label it, and put it in a box. And I think you pay for those in the NFL. In college, no, it goes back to a ball boy.
The ball boy, they got a ball boy on that sideline. I'm sure they just hand it to him.
On each sideline, the ball boy is there.
All right, that was a stupid question, but I'm just curious.
No, there are no stupid questions.
Have a great day.
Usually just our stupid answers, right?
I never thought Alabama fans would take pride in inventing the turnover reward because it has gotten so cliche.
It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous, really.
If
you watch the Alabama players, I think they probably should get rid of the turnover belt.
You don't think they like it?
There's no joy in them jumping up and down, and they don't pose for pictures like you see at Miami or other places with their turnover pencil or whatever.
Yeah, to me, it's really unique to Miami. I don't like it necessarily. I think it's a little hokey, but you can tell how involved they are in it. So they love it. I mean, everybody's bought into that in that Miami culture. So, you know, it's great for them. But you mentioned Tom Arth has instilled at Akron now, an awful team, a turnover pencil. It's a 3-foot number 2 pencil.
Yeah.
And when you hold it up, it looks like you're the weakest guy in the weight room doing just the bar as you lift it up. Can't be that heavy. All right, here we go. 4 downs, Vulcan Tires, every day, 4 locations.
Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, and Trustful. Be sure to ask about that $200 rebate on select Goodyear tires now through September 30th. Visit them online. Go to VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
First down.
Today, believe it or not, is Roberto Clemente Day.
Oh, one of the greatest players of all time.
If I asked you the best player in Pittsburgh sports history, who would you go with?
Oh, LT, I think the answer here, unfortunately, is going to be
Jaromir Jagr.
Mario.
I was going to go Mario Lemieux.
I was going to be Lemieux.
Yeah.
See, I would go Barry Bonds here.
I think he did more of his heavy lifting out at San Francisco.
He was an MVP.
He was good.
MVP there.
He was good.
Tony Dorsett would be in the mix. What he did with the Panthers
in college, but again, most of his heavy lifting was with the Cowboys.
Funny thing is, we hadn't said any Steelers, have we?
Yeah, but when you get to the Steelers, I mean, you got Lynn. You just had so many during the 70s. You had Swan and Stallworth. Swan was, you know, one of the more acrobatic.
Jack Lambert, Joe Green, Mike Webster,
Jack Lambert. I mean, Franco Harris was one of the great runners of all
time.
Troy
Polamalu, I mean, one of the great safeties of all time.
I mean, you got to throw Big Ben in there. Guy's been a quarterback forever.
I would go Bonds. I had Lemieux number two, though.
Yeah, I would go Lemieux, and Bonds would be second or third.
Second down.
Okay, more points this Saturday. Would you go LSU over Vanderbilt or Arkansas over San Jose State?
Real quickly, Larry Fitzgerald at Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Almost won the Heisman, right?
Runner up.
Okay, repeat second again.
Okay, more total points Saturday. LSU over Vanderbilt or Arkansas over San Jose State?
I think I would go Arkansas over San Jose State. Even though Vanderbilt isn't a difficult place to play, it's a road game for LSU. Derek Mason knows defense. He will have some things that give them weird looks. They're not going to struggle to score, but I don't think they're going to score like in the high 40s.
Yeah, it's not the road game part of it because we all know LSU will have at least equal number of fans, but I think Derek Mason is an underrated defensive mind, though I think he's back not calling the defenses again this year. But the Stanford program hasn't been the same since he left as their defensive coordinator to take over at Vandy. They are a good defensive scheming team. Georgia scored 30. I expect LSU to score about 30, win the game sort of like, you know, you saw Georgia win it 30-6, something like that.
Yeah, the interesting thing in Las Vegas, the team total for LSU points is slightly more than Arkansas, but it's really close.
Yeah, I just think with Arkansas, with Starkel now being your established starter, you're trying to get him confidence. I think you'll play him a long time in the game if you're Chad Morris, and you're just trying to get impressive wins right now if you're Chad Morris because the losses are about to start stacking up for them. So you're still trying to get a fan base on your side if you're him.
Third down.
Which coach is Saturday's game more important for? Would you go Jimbo or Gus?
That's why I think it's such a fascinating game, because it's going to be important for whoever wins it and whoever loses it. But I'm going to say it's more important for Gus Malzahn at this point. Right now, this keeps a hope of a magical season alive, and you just sort of sense that there's that one loss lurking, that as soon as that first one happens, that the naysayers will start creeping out and wait for that next loss.
Yeah, I just don't think Jimbo Fisher's clock will start ticking this year, no matter what happens. I mean, look, if it was disastrous, but, you know, in a reasonable scenario,
if they don't
his clock never starts ticking this year.
I mean, of their big games, if they don't win any of them, Brown, if they're 7-5, I mean,
he's not getting fired at the end of the year.
Oh, he's never getting fired.
Not at the end of the year.
Too much money. There's never getting fired.
But there is a scenario where Gus Malzahn can get fired at the end of this year, and starting with a loss to Texas A&M, for a lot of people, will start that clock ticking. Look, I mean, Sports by Brooks is tweeting about Jimmy Rain, millionaire, wanting to target Bob Stoops. This is not groundbreaking reporting. I think everybody's going to target Bob Stoops and at least ask his interest. So, you know, those stories are already out there. You don't hear that kind of stuff about Jimbo Fisher.
To me, though, it's bigger for Jimbo Fisher because it is year two. And going into the season, there were three games, at least on paper, we said A&M couldn't win. And that was Clemson, that was Alabama, and that was Georgia. Now if you lose to Auburn, we look at LSU on the road. That looks like a game they're not going to win. So 7-5 in year two, with all of this talent you've amassed, and everybody talks about how well he's done recruiting and the way he lost the Auburn game last year, it's a huge game for both of these coaches, but to me a little bit bigger for Jimbo at home in a game your favorite.
Hey, by the way, that's number one, number two, number three, number four on that Texas A&M schedule. The AP, they're basically playing the AP poll almost in order.
They are. For both teams, though, this is the fourth most difficult game left on your schedule. So that's when you lose it, that's what you know, is I've got three games that are more difficult than this one left.
Fourth down.
And here's what I initially wanted to ask you guys. More surprising upset in the SEC this week. Would you say Tennessee over Florida or Notre Dame over Georgia?
Notre Dame over Georgia.
Without a doubt, it's Notre Dame over Georgia.
I mean, Florida's starting a backup quarterback. If Trask fell apart, it wouldn't blow me away. Well,
I mean, these numbers are basically the same in Las Vegas. I agree with you guys 100%.
Not even close. I mean, it
would be shocking if Notre Dame beats Georgia.
Yes. I'd be shocked.
My dad doesn't bet the house on anything, but I told him last night, bet the house on Georgia over Notre Dame.
Oh, boy.
He goes, that's 13.5 points. And I said,
do you know your son, Dad?
Yeah.
You know my track record?
You know my favorite part about your dad's reaction is it wasn't the value of the house. It was the point spread.
Yeah.
He didn't say, son, you know our house is worth X. He said, that's a 13.5 point spread.
No, he would never bet the house, but Notre Dame.
It's just an old saying, right?
Yeah, it's not even.
People have done it.
Not even close. This game's not even close. I give Tennessee a fighting chance to win the game.
Well, if you had your house on a game, how tough would those last 5 minutes be?
Well, I think it's gonna be tough with the wife too.
Would you pre-pack?
Do you even tell the wife?
Oh, you don't tell the wife.
Let's make that. First of all, that's Four Downs brought to you by Vulcan Tires.
Four great locations: Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, and Trustful. Be sure to ask about that $200 rebate on select Goodyear tires now through September 30th. Visit them online. Go to VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
If you were betting the house, literally betting the house on a game, would you pre-pack? Just in case you lost, because you don't want to pack after losing your house.
Anger pack?
Yeah, because that would be horrible.
No, you...
Well, if you pre-pack, though, the wife's going to know. Why aren't we packing up all of our furniture?
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
Well, sweetie, I'll tell you after the
I think I would pre-pack because unpacking, I hate to pack, first off.
You're not confident if you're pre-packing.
Or is it the reverse psychology? I'm going to go ahead and pre-pack, and then you win. But then you got to unpack. Oh, God, I hate unpacking, too.
Is that worth a poll question? If you literally bet your house on a game, would you pre-pack or would you pack in sadness if you lost?
Or maybe the better question is, would you tell the wife that you've got the house bet?
Yeah. Or at that point, you've already lost everything. You don't even pack at all. You just leave everything at the house.
Do you leave the wife, too? Because she's going to leave you.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Win or lose, if she finds out you had the house on a game, it's probably over anyway.
I mean, how many relationships have been busted up because of gambling addiction?
Oh, a lot. A lot. I would say close to the same number as alcoholism.
Yeah, I mean, look, I got to be honest. There were moments in my life where, with my ex-wife, there were those Saturdays or those Sundays where you would get so consumed in a game, you would forget about everything else.
Really?
I never saw that side of you.
Yeah. You guys will get there. I guarantee you, I know Dunaway's been there.
Oh, my.
Brown will get there one day.
Yeah. I'm there every Saturday. I'm at home. This is Gus yesterday talking about Kellen Mond, a guy he knows through recruiting, through the quarterback circles, a guy he's very familiar with. Here's the Auburn coach on the quarterback he faces this weekend.
No, he looks like a guy that understands been in the offense for 2 years. He can flat out throw it. And when he takes it and he tucks it and runs it, and when he goes north-south, he can really run. So he presents a lot of challenges. And offensively, they do a lot of different things. You know, and like I said, they mix up the run and pass with different formations, different personnel groups. And he looks like he's in command of the offense this year.
That's Gus Malzahn yesterday. In a second, does Kellen Mond really have to play better than Bo Nix for their team to win the game? And just how big is this game for both teams? That in just 15 seconds.
The perfect game day tailgate without the expense and hassles of traveling to the stadium is at Avondale Brewing this fall. You've got to check out their new 30x17 LED wall. Incredible for watching all the big games this fall. Get updates on Avondale Brewing social media channels as well as avondalebrewing.com.
Okay, answer that question first. Does Kellen Mond have to play better than Bo Nix for Texas A&M to win the game?
No, I think this is going to come down to defenses. I think it'll come down to quarterbacks making mistakes. You go back last year, I still don't know how Jimbo Fisher and A&M didn't win that game on the road. Mond was not good at all. Completed 50% of his passes, one touch, one pick, only 220 yards. I don't expect Mond to play well against this Auburn defense, even at home. He's 1-4 against top 10 teams in his career. He's thrown at least one pick in 10 of his last 13 games. I think it's going to come down to great defense. I think it'll come down to running the football. And I think whoever wins turnover margin will win this football game.
So on average, Mond is completing 65% of his passes and throwing for 249 a game. Like Lance said, he's got 5 touchdowns, 3 picks in 3 games. So let's just say 8 touchdowns. So if I give you his numbers, he completes about 65% of his passes for 249 yards, a touchdown and a pick. You
that's good enough to win.
That's good enough to win? Yeah. That's two touchdowns and a pick.
Put it this way.
Technically, he's at five touchdowns.
I don't think Monday, when we come on this show, I don't think we're going to be saying, wow, what a performance by Kellen Mond.
Well, let me do the same thing for Bo Nix.
Even if Texas A&M wins a game.
Bo Nix is completing 52% of his passes for 181 a game, about a touchdown a game, and a little less than a pick a game. So let's say he does that. Let's say 52%, 180 yards passing, a touchdown, and no picks.
Oh, that's fine. You just don't want him to turn the football over again. For Auburn to win this game, it's about their defense dominating.
So both guys just do their normal numbers. You're good with it, right?
Yeah.
So how good do you think Kellen Mond needs to be, Dunaway? Better than the numbers I gave you?
No. I think it does come back to what LT's talking about is if Auburn's defense disrupts him.
This is very cliche what I'm saying. You win the turnover battle, you win this game. But, I mean, to me, this is an NFL-like game.
Well, that obviously doesn't always happen because Clemson's unbeaten and Trevor's turned it over five times throwing the football.
But Clemson can outplay that with all of the talent that
they've got. Yeah, they've got an elite talent advantage at every single game they play.
And how balanced they are. I don't trust either one of these offenses right now. Elko's defense is getting better and better. The best unit by far on this field will be Auburn's defense.
And that was my point on why I thought Kellen Mond had to have a good game, because Auburn's got the advantage in the defense. I do see a low-scoring game.
I do, too.
You said that, too.
I think 2017, that type of game. The reason I don't believe Mond's got to have this game is, first of all, I don't expect it. I just don't think he's that type of elite player, and I don't think he can go out and play that well against a defense to the caliber of Auburn. But I also, you know, this could be one of those situations, another learning, growing moment for Bo Nix, where if he turns the football over a couple of times and puts Auburn in bad situations, that could be the difference.
Now, the only defense he's faced is Clemson, Mond, and he threw 42 times. That's because they got behind and they had to throw a lot late.
Take that late touchdown
especially,
away.
Especially on one drive late. But in that game, he threw for 236, a TD and a pick. Now, he was only 57% because they threw it so much.
No, really, take away that final drive. I know you can't.
I don't know what he was on that drive, though.
But I want to say it was 70 yards. So I think he was more like 150 yards in that game with no
touchdowns
and
a pick. Yeah.
I think that was more realistic.
And Clemson now, look, Clemson, I think Lance kind of played him soft a lot of that drive. But late in that drive, they did not want him to score. They did not want to give up that touchdown.
Kellen Mond was so bad in that first half.
He was awful. Absolutely terrible.
Yep. And that's what Auburn's looking for this week. Now, when you get to the importance of this game, yesterday I told you that there were some Auburn fans, including our friend Bobby from Homewood, who sees this as if Auburn loses. He's not saying Auburn will lose. He's saying if they lose, for him, it's time to start the countdown clock on basketball season. Is that where you guys are on the importance of this game to Auburn?
I don't know that I'm starting the countdown clock to basketball, but as I pointed out earlier, for both of these teams, you've got at least three more difficult games than this one.
Yeah.
For Auburn, it may be four. I don't know how you guys feel about Florida in comparison to Texas A&M. They're both road games. I mean, would you say the Florida, it's about the same to me? So you've got three or four more difficult games than this one once you're finished with this. Now, the A&M's got a difficult schedule too, but if you're Auburn, this might be the only the fifth most difficult game you've got remaining.
I do feel confident saying this. We talked about bet the house games earlier in the show. The loser of this game, I would bet my house, will not win the West. So that's how important this game is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you say, okay, Texas A&M already has one loss. It's two losses, but that was out of conference, of course. So this would be a conference loss, which impacts your trip to Atlanta. So you can see the importance of that. But you feel like you can get to Atlanta with one loss, but you don't think this would be the last loss for the loser of this team.
You can't get to Atlanta with this loss.
I mean, at least right now on paper, Auburn will be underdogs in four more SEC games. You know, and the likelihood of running the table, you know, as an underdog in four SEC games is not high.
This does fall about where that LSU loss in 2013 happened for Auburn, and they were able to rally. But again, that was LSU.
That was a special season,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that was LSU and not, you know, Texas A&M with LSU and Alabama still to play.
It's exactly where it fell. September 21, Dunaway, week four, when Auburn lost 35-21 at LSU.
Yeah, and that was sort of a turning point in that 2013 season. Interesting as Auburn goes there, we've talked about the Michigan-Wisconsin game as well. Elsewhere around the country, when you look at UCF and Pittsburgh, we've debated about where UCF comes in, and really nobody's even giving them a chance to make the college football playoffs. But Furman gave you a little hope. If you are anti-UCF and are ready for this storyline to go away. He gave you a little hope that Pittsburgh could keep this game close and maybe upset UCF at the end. Did you read anything into what Furman says that makes you think that the Knights go down this weekend?
No, I think we might have been hearing a different conversation. I think what he was saying is they can cover a big number that is stretching out to 13 points.
Oh, so you heard it the other way around.
I heard it. Look, Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett, you know, put up over 300 yards last week against Penn State, but that equated to no touchdowns. And if you can, you know, get some points on the board for Pittsburgh, they can make it a little more interesting. They don't have the athletes to play with UCF.
Yeah, I went back yesterday and watched the UCF-Stanford game from beginning to end, fast-forwarding when it got to be 28-0.
It was over quick.
But it was over quick. And if you took uniforms off, Stanford's never had a team that looked like that to me. UCF's athletes and their quarterback and their speed, even on defense and the touchdown that ended up ruling out of bounds at the one-yard line.
You know what Stanford looks like right now? Ironically, because you brought this up, and that defense hasn't been the same since Derek Mason left. They look like Vanderbilt to me. I mean, that's the type of team. You know, they're not bad, but they're just kind of slow for their league. And they've got still a really good quarterback in KJ Costello. They don't have the parts around him, but I've watched way too much Pittsburgh this year. Going back to week one against Virginia, they couldn't get anything going offensively. Got shut down completely in the second half. Only scored 20 points at home against Ohio. And then last week, only 10 points against Penn State. I don't know how they get enough points to keep up with Central Florida.
If I asked you the best quarterback in Group of Five right now, is it Dylan Gabriel? Is it Derek King? Or is it Bachmeier at Boise State? You may want to throw somebody else into the mix there, but those are three really good quarterbacks that are playing really good football. I guess you throw Shane Bouchel in there.
Bouchel would have to be in there for the SMU, just the way he's played through 3 weeks.
So who do you go with? Because Gabriel kid was so spot on, some of those throws.
Yeah, I think Gabriel's going to ultimately be that guy. Although he hasn't played well, and this is a North Texas team that is sitting at 1-2, you know, I do believe Mason Fine is still the most talented guy out of all those with the experience. And look, nobody talked about this game because they were down double digits, but they fought back against Cal and only lost that game by 6.
Why didn't you not throw Bachmeier? Was Bachmeier in there?
No, I did throw him.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Bachmeier's the guy.
That's who I'd go with. Yeah.
That's who I go with, too.
I'd go with Gabriel right now.
Okay. Well, I told you yesterday that the kid, Carson King, 24, in Ames, Iowa, on College Game Day, the guy with the beer sign that said, Busch Light Supply needs replenished, Venmo Carson-King-25, had raised $6,000 for him and that he was giving it all to Children's Hospital. Well, the money has kept pouring in, and it has gone now as of 11:48 p.m., last night, according to Darren Ravel, it got up to $81,000 that is going now to the kids.
That is amazing. $81,000?
$81,000.
So this is the second wave now that people are reporting on, and it's not just people seeing it on game day. Everybody's like, oh, this is cool.
Yep.
Wow, that's really awesome, man. Good for him.
Yeah. So that's a pretty neat deal there. 27,000 of it directly into Venmo, and other people that are matching the donations gets it up to an $81,000 donation for a good cause now. So it actually worked out not just for Busch Light money there for Carson King, part of that entertaining college football weekend we just had in the past. UAB with a big game, 2:30 at home. South Alabama UAB, 2:30 here on Jocks. The defense has really turned the corner for this UAB team. Offense lit up Akron, but their defense has been great on third down. They've been forcing fumbles through the first two games. Coming off the bye week, Bill Clark yesterday on three-man front. You can hear that interview at jocksfm.com. It's a 2:30 game, so it'll be a hot one, but not as hot because we've got a little cooling spell coming in tomorrow. But for UAB, a little momentum now. You want to take care of business to get into Conference USA play after this one.
You know, I feel like maybe – and Coach Clark discussed this with us last week when he was with us in the bye week. The way they played that game on the road at Akron, they probably wouldn't have minded skipping the old bye week, because you're right. They were – I don't know that there was a team in America that improved more from week one to week two than what we saw UAB do.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you had to take a break after it. So can you find that momentum again? can you pick up where you left off at Akron?
And South Alabama on that side, you look at how good they looked at least keeping things close against Nebraska and then just completely laid down against Memphis.
Destroy at home. Memphis just destroyed them down in Mobile.
Bill Clark's a name that gets mentioned a lot. I think Brian Harsin at Boise State will be a big name this offseason if they continue where they're going for a big-time job opening. But keep Eastern Michigan's Chris Creighton in mind. Eastern Michigan, for the third straight year, has beaten a Big Ten team, and they're aiming under his program, under his leadership, for a third bowl in 4 years. That used to be one of the worst college football programs in FBS. Good job.